It's easy to be a one-time success, but the real issue is, can you keep coming back and living at a high level or performing at a high level or running a company at a high level consistently year after year? That's what excellence means to me. Being the very best you can, but doing it regularly over and over again.
Welcome to the Building Excellence Podcast. I'm your host, Bailey Miles. The Building Excellence Podcast is all about sharing inspiring stories from some of the most successful athletes, coaches, business minds, and thought leaders to help you build excellence in your life, leadership, and legacy. To learn more, visit baileymiles.com and be sure to rate, review, and follow us on all social media platforms. Now let's get to the show and start building excellence in your life, leadership, and legacy. Pat Williams is the co-founder of the Orlando Magic and a member of the Basketball Hall of Fame. He has also been the former GM of the Chicago Bulls, Atlanta Hawks, Orlando Magic, and the Philadelphia 76ers, where he helped lead to the NBA title in 1983. He has drafted players like Shaquille O'Neal, Charles Barkley, and Penny Hardaway, and built rosters with players like Julius Erving, Maurice Cheeks, and many, many others. Pat is also a top inspirational corporate speaker and is a best-selling author of over 100 books. He has many, but one of my all-time favorite books is Your Formula for Success, which I would highly recommend to you to check out. It's a great tool focused on helping you find the place where your passion and talent meet. And even with a long list of accolades, Pat is not slowing down. With his newest venture, he shares what it takes to start and build a new MLB franchise in Orlando, Florida from the ground up. He has a unique perspective on being an executive in professional baseball and basketball, building a championship team, and building something from the ground up. Pat and his wife have 19 children, including 14 who are adopted. On the show, he shares his perspective of the importance of faith and family. For more information on Pat, the Orlando Dreamers, and his newest book on aging, check out patwilliams.com. Enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the Building Excellence Podcast. Today I have a special guest, Pat Williams, with me. Pat, thank you so much for being here.
Bailey, wonderful to be on with you. I appreciate the invitation. And to make this all the better, I'm going to turn my phone off.
Awesome.
Hope you're doing well. Thanks, Bailey.
Yes. Well, if you wouldn't mind, maybe give our listeners some context to your background and what life was like growing up for you.
Oh, Bailey, gosh, I grew up in a sports-minded family. My dad was a high school coach and teacher in Wilmington, Delaware. And I got involved in the sports world very young. Played all three sports. Back in those days, it was football, basketball, and baseball. No soccer, no lacrosse. And so I've been involved in the world of sports really since I was a very young kid. I left Wilmington, Delaware, my hometown, went to Wake Forest University. I was a catcher there for 4 years. Go Deeks. They're in the College World Series as we speak.
I know. You got it on behind you. So.
And yeah, I've got the College World Series going right now.
Got some Tulsa guys at ORU, so.
Yeah, ORU's playing as we speak. Mm-hmm. And so I got into professional sports right out of college. I spent 2 years as a minor league catcher in the Philly system. They funneled me into the front office where I spent 5 years running minor league ball clubs for the Phillies. And then the switch to the NBA for 51 years. And now I'm back in the baseball business. We're trying to bring a Major League Baseball team to Orlando. And so that's got us consumed as well.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot in your story. And obviously you went to Wake Forest, played baseball, got to play for the Phillies. What was it? Was it something that you always wanted to do to be in the front office of a baseball organization and then move into to basketball? Or how did you kind of get into sports professionally after you played as a professional athlete?
Well, above all, I wanted to be a major league ball player. I wanted to catch in the big leagues. I got 2 years in the minor leagues, which was wonderful background for me. But I think even as a youngster, way back, in collecting baseball cards when I was 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, even then you're thinking about the front office. You're trying to get extra cards and so you can trade with your buddies and make a deal with your baseball cards. That's really, I think, a good preparation for the front office of sports. So I had my eye on the field first and then into the front office, and that's exactly how it worked out. I got a taste of being a professional baseball player, riding the buses and getting to know minor league ball players, and that was I couldn't put a price tag on that, and that certainly was a good foundation for the years that I've spent in the front office of sports.
Absolutely, yeah. Trading baseball cards and making trades with other people turned out pretty well for a good preparation for your career for the rest of your
Oh,
life.
I
So,
think so. I listen.
yeah.
There's, there, it, you kind of laugh about it, but in many cases, it's true.
Yeah.
And sports really comes down to evaluating personnel, knowing how to draft and acquire players, knowing how to make wise trades, and so forth. So, I think that's all preparation that started for me when I was probably about 7 or 8 years old.
Absolutely. And I think it's really interesting how sometimes in life we go through things like that where we're just doing something because it's fun. And as we look back, maybe some of these things that we learn helped prepare us for the positions that we get into at a later time. And typically it's looking back that you understand that. But going into
Oh, I think that, Brady, it's true. I started going to the big league ballpark in Philadelphia when I was 7, Shibe Park, 21st and Lehigh. My parents took me up there every weekend, because I had fallen in love with baseball at the age of 7, and that's where I spent every weekend at watching either the Philadelphia Athletics or the Philadelphia Phillies play, and baseball was my life. I then got funneled into the world of basketball as a kid, became absorbed with that, football as well. And I knew very early on what I wanted to do with my life. I wanted to spend it in some capacity in sports, and I've been very, very fortunate along the way.
And you had a chance to work in Spartanburg, South Carolina, and manage a team there, and then obviously get into professional baseball. How did you make the jump to basketball? Because that's something that you don't necessarily hear about, especially nowadays.
Well, it was freaky, I would say. I was running the Phillies minor league ball club in Spartanburg, South Carolina for 4 years. In July of 1968, which was my 4th year there, I was 28 years old. The phone rang, and it was Dr. Jack Ramsey, who then was the general manager of the 76ers. He told me he was about to become the coach, and he needed somebody to run his front office because he was going to be traveling and coaching most of the time. And would I be interested? Now, I had never met Jack Ramsey. I knew he was a great college coach in Philadelphia. Certainly knew the name. He never met. We never met. I went up to Philadelphia twice for interviews, and eventually they offered me the job. 3 years, 3-year contract. Wow, $20,000 a year. Unheard of money in those days. And I left baseball and went to the Sixers, and that's what started this whole thing. It was not something that I had ever thought about. My life was geared towards baseball, and all of a sudden the phone rang one day and my life changed. And I don't regret that. I had 5 incredible decades in pro basketball, loved it, still do, still follow it very, very closely. Still excited about the NBA draft next week. And but now we're diving full board trying to bring Major League Baseball to Orlando, and that's what has me consumed now.
Absolutely. And I'm excited to talk to you about that. But even going into your story, you talked about you had never met the man who called you about having an opportunity to go to the 76ers. But you don't get that call if you didn't do a really good job where you were at and working hard, treating people the right way. There's a lot of things in a lot of your books that you talk about consistently about doing those things over and over and doing them with excellence at a high level. So I think that doesn't happen unless you were doing those things every single day, and they provide opportunities that maybe you didn't even think about. And so obviously you got to spend a lot of years in the NBA. What did it look like when you went to the Bulls and then maybe going over to the Hawks and then back to the 76ers and being able to win a championship and put a team in place that had all the characteristics of maybe good leadership? Or what are your perspectives on putting people together, creating a culture, and establishing something that can last?
At the end of the day, everything comes down to leadership. And as a young guy, I wasn't using that word. Your word wasn't used then. But I really was thrust into leadership positions very early. And since then, I've made a study of it, written about it extensively, speak about it in a public forum. And leadership ultimately comes down to 7 key principles. And that's what I've tried to practice, continue to try and practice. It starts with vision, and then the ability to communicate your vision. The third thing I would stress are people skills, working and knowing people and working with them. Character still counts in leadership. The fifth component would be competence. You got to be good at what you do. Boldness. Ultimately, leaders have to make tough decisions. They have to make bold decisions. And the seventh piece is simply called a serving heart mentality. You're really a servant attitudinally in that role as a leader. So I can summarize it by saying my friend Sven Nader wrote this poem for me, Seven Things One Must Do to Be a Leader, Right and True. Have vision that is strong and clear. Communicate so they can hear. Have people skills based in love and character that's far above. The competence to solve and teach, and boldness that has fearless reach. A serving heart that stands close by to help, assist, and edify. So that's my take on leadership, Billy.
That's pretty good. That's a great poem. And ironically, I interviewed Swin just the other day. So that's ironic that you
Oh,
would say that.
really?
Absolutely. So,
How did
but
that go?
it was great. It was fantastic. He had a great perspective and a great story, and he's had a lot of different things in his life that great application. So anyway, but I love that poem, and I love those principles that you talked about in leadership. Are you someone who is naturally good at those things, or did you have to work at different levels of maybe maybe not being so good at one, but trying to work on another to be better.
Oh, I don't think I was, I don't think anybody's really born with those attributes. I guess every now and then there's a born leader, but by all means, leadership is a skill, an art form that's developed. It's developed through experience. It's developed through a teachable spirit. It's developed through being a lifelong learner. It's developed by asking good questions and seeking answers. All of the above, I think leadership can definitely be developed and enhanced and improved, and it takes work. And I think every day we can get better as leaders. That's my belief. That's what I teach and write about and talk about,
Yes, I couldn't agree
and
more.
try and exhibit as well.
Absolutely. The example is huge. Being able to exemplify the things that you actually care about makes a big difference. So going into maybe taking a step out of being the GM for the 76ers and going into starting a franchise called the Orlando Magic at the time, what was kind of the idea behind that, and why did you maybe want to take the step into something that was totally different? I mean, you had a lot of background in basketball, but something that maybe was unknown. What was that perspective like, and how did that come about?
We had great success in Philly. I'd been there 12 years. We won the title in 83. And I kind of felt that I'd done just about everything I could do there. The ultimate challenge in any part of this business of professional sports is expansion and starting your own team up from scratch. And so it was a huge challenge to move to Orlando. Orlando then back in the mid-80s was not that big market. It was beginning to come along, but it was nothing like what it is now. So there was a large amount of risk involved. But the NBA was open to expanding. They were thinking about adding more teams at that point. We got into a hot pursuit. Miami was in the middle of all this, and Charlotte, North Carolina, Minnesota. And we had no idea how it was going to turn out. But as it turned out, from the time we started in June of 86 to April of 87, in that 10-month period, the NBA agreed to take all four of us as expansion cities. And as a result, we were able to unpack our suitcases and buy a house and put roots here. And we've been here now 37 years. We've seen amazing growth in this community, and it continues to grow. It's the fastest growing area in the United States with no end in sight. So it's a very, very exciting place to live. And we just need a little bigger sports portfolio. We've got the NBA here now, and Major League Soccer is here. The University of Central Florida has just moved into the Big 12, which is a big athletic step. And we need one more major league sport, and we feel that's baseball, and could be very, very successful here.
So now you're back in your baseball stuff. What does it look like to go from scratch starting a baseball Major League Baseball franchise in Orlando? And you've had experience obviously starting the Magic. And like you touched on, there's a lot of things going for the community of Orlando and just Florida in general right now for sports.
I think that's accurate, and I learned a great deal from 37 years ago when we got into this, and we're putting many of those same steps in place here, plus all everything that I've learned since then. But it comes down to getting your community excited. It comes down to getting some sort of a commitment. We have almost 14,000 people who have said, and we got them, recorded. That they would be interested in baseball and season tickets, perhaps. And we've got to get the funding for a ballpark. Now it's a whole lot more expensive than it used to be. I mean, you could build an arena, for example, and for less than $500 million today, this ballpark we're working on is going to cost $1.7 billion. So the price is dramatically different. Our expansion fee in 1986, 87 was 32.5 million to get into the NBA. They're talking now about an expansion fee that could be around 2 billion. So the
It's a lot
numbers have a
different,
lot more zeros on them.
for
And
sure.
but we're watching all that very carefully, and we feel good about our chances.
Absolutely. So, what does that look like reaching out to the community, working with Major League Baseball, trying to continue to build interest, but at the same time, raise the capital, have the funds to be able to go and actually execute that?
Well, you've got to have four things going in order to be successful in this effort to get a team, and let's assume by expansion. Number one, you've got to have the marketplace. And right now, Orlando is the 17th largest media market in North America. We have just passed Miami. Denver is next on the list, and then Detroit, Minneapolis, St. Paul. We're going to catch all three of them in the next 5 years. The marketplace is here. Plus, this enormous number, 80 million visitors come here every year. And we got to think that 2% of them would like to go see a ball game. Secondly, you've got to have the ballpark. And we're in the process now of getting this funding worked out. We've made our presentation to Orange County. They generate, because of this resort tax, an enormous amount of money every month. And that money is earmarked for tourist development. And we think that we've got a compelling argument about that. Third, you've got to have a front office that knows what they're doing. Running a professional sports team is not for amateurs. You can't just walk in from some other business and expect to be capable at it. So we feel good about that. And fourth, you've got to have the owner. You've got to have an owner with the right financial means. He's got to be acceptable to Major League Baseball. He's got to have a great love for sports. And fourth, he's got to have a personality and a lifestyle that fits in with the culture of Orlando. We're searching for that person. We're trying to find that man or woman who can be the right owner for this team. So we think we've got all the ingredients once we get that ownership nailed down, and we think that we have a compelling argument on why baseball should put a team here.
You just need to put a sign that says looking for an owner and go sit out by Disneyland or Disney World.
Well, or stand out on the street corner. Owner, we'll work for hire. We're searching for that person, and we've talked to many, many, and we'll continue to talk till we find the right person.
Absolutely. Well, there's a lot in that, and being able to start that and go after that, and the four qualities you just described, as well as the seven principles of leadership, is something that you've done your entire career. So I'm just curious, because there's a lot that goes on in athletics, and there's a lot of time that you spend, working, especially trying to compete every year for a championship. What did it look like for you? Because you have a big family. And if you wouldn't mind talking about how you were able to integrate family into your work, and then also faith, and how important that was for you.
We do have a big family. We have 18 children, and actually, that's not correct because we have 19 children. The oldest is now early 50s, youngest late 30s. 14 of those children we adopted from foreign countries over a period of time. We have 21 grandkids now, so we're deeply immersed in the grandparenting business and enjoying that immensely. And my Christian faith really is the backbone of my life. I came to know the Lord when I was 27 years old. I was in Spartanburg running the Phillies Farm Club and seeking answers to life. And I couldn't quite get my grip on life. I was trying a lot of things, enjoying my career. There was a certain void, a certain emptiness there that the things of this world just were not filling. And so I responded to an invitation to accept Christ and invite him into my life. And I did that. It was life-changing for me. It worked. I'm still walking with the Lord, and he's made all the difference in my life. I can see now that he's had a plan for my life, a purpose for my life, and my job is to just follow his lead. And that's what I've been doing all these years. So I'm grateful for that experience that I had. So that's where we are today. I'm 83 years old. My energy level's good. I've won a battle with cancer. And now we just are going to keep pursuing this baseball effort and keep helping to raise grandchildren. I still have a few more books to write, a few more speeches to give, and trying to live my life absolutely to the fullest and in a way that would be pleasing to the Lord.
Absolutely. And I think, if I remember right, it was Mr. Little John, was that correct, who played a big role in your life early on when you're in
Well,
Spartanburg?
Mr. Ari Littlejohn was one of the owners of the ball club in Spartanburg when I got there. I was 24 years old. I just finished my playing career and starting out in the front office. And Mr. Littlejohn was a remark. He was in the tanker trailer business, but he loved baseball, and he and his partner owned the ball club in Spartanburg. I spent 4 years with him there. He had an enormous impact on my life. I remained in close touch with him for, well, 20 more years until he passed away. Never made a major move in my life without consulting him. So to have a godly man like that who possessed a rare quality, it was called wisdom. And I could always go to him with situations that had arisen or things that were going on in my life and seek his counsel. And really was wisdom that he had. He had the ability to look at situations and analyze them, evaluate them, and give you a good indication that you do this and follow this. This is probably what's going to end up. If you follow this and go this path, that's probably what's going to end up. And he just had an uncanny ability to see the future really before it got here. That's why people in all walks of life sought him out. They were always in his living room, seeking his counsel, his opinion, his advice. I was very blessed to have Mr. Little Johnson.
And I think it's a good point that you bring up, it's just being around him, seeking wisdom and learning from him. And then you touched on, whenever you're looking at major decisions, you always went to him for just his perspective. Have you always been someone that sought out people maybe ahead of you, or where you wanted to be, maybe ahead of you in your faith, or maybe ahead of you and your family? And then also, too, how important is seeking out people?
Well, I think it's vital. We need mentors in my life. I'm not sure what you call them, mentors or life coaches. I just called Mr. Littlejohn coach. I mean, the rest of my life, I just called him coach. He was a life coach. We need them. We don't need 100 of them, but I think you need a mentor or a life coach in the financial area of your life, perhaps the marriage area of your life, definitely in the spiritual area of your life, probably in the professional area of your life. You need about four or five of those people, and you never outgrow your need for them. I'm now approaching my mid-80s. I still have mentors in my life that I go to regularly, trying to get their opinion, get their advice, get their counsel before making decisions. And particularly so with young people. Wise are the young people who seek out good counsel of people who've already been down the road. They know what the detours look down there. They know what the pitfalls are. They can save so much time in your life to seek them out and go to them for counsel. So I encourage people at all levels to have a number of mentors in your life. Go to them. You don't have to have a formal relationship. Don't pay them. They don't. They have lunch periodically, just to go over things and review things in your life.
Absolutely. And I know you've done that with so many people. You've written a lot of books on the people that you've been around and got to be with, Coach Wooden being one of them. Going into your books a little bit, what are some things you're excited about writing? And maybe how could people find out more about some of your books?
Well, I've just finished writing a book on aging that'll be out later this year. We're working on the ultimate dictionary of leadership that we're working on. It'll be out next year. We've taken every word that I have used in my research on leadership from A to Z. A being authentic, accountable, Z being zestful, zip, zing. And we do a we're writing a piece of instruction or counsel on every word in my leadership vocabulary. That's quite a project. That book will be out next year, and we're eager to see how that plays out. So I still have a few more books in. And if we can pull this baseball thing off, that's going to be a book unto itself.
That better be a book, yeah.
Get this done. There have been so many. We've been working on it for 4 years, and there have been so many interesting twists and turns and fascinating people that we've encountered so far. So we've got, hoping that comes about. That would be that's quite a story.
Absolutely. Well, I just wanted to touch on some of those books and the things you're writing. I can't wait for your newest book to come out. And also, I would love to read the book once you guys establish that baseball team in Orlando. That'd be a fascinating read. Real quickly, I
Thank
want to
you.
honor your time and wind down. So I've got a little fire round. So I say a sentence and you can finish with a word or sentence, however you feel led, whatever comes top of mind. So you can do anything if.
If you work at it and study and apply yourself and make sure you're prepared.
Humility means.
Humility means not thinking so much of yourself. It means be proud of yourself, but remember there's no indispensable man or woman. And remember, Jesus was God, but he was also a human being for 33 years, yet the most humble man who ever walked this planet. So God in the flesh modeled humility to us. That was one of the great features of Mr. Littlejohn, by the way. I mean, he was a man of wealth and stature and influence, but you would never know it. So there was an absolute humility to him, really, really registered.
Awesome. Do you have a favorite vacation spot?
Orlando, Florida.
All
I mean, 80 million people come here from all over the world for their vacation. So we live here. So
You're there.
there's a reason it's the vacation capital of the world. So That would be my answer.
The last question I have for you, this podcast is called Building Excellence. What does building
Excellence. What is
excellence mean to
building?
you?
Doing the very best you can with what you've got, and being consistent with it. You know, it's easy to be a one-time success, but the real issue is, can you keep coming back and living at a high level, or performing at a high level, or running a company at a high level consistently year after year? That's what excellence means to me. Being the very best you can, but doing it regularly, over and over again. That's the earmark to me of a person of excellence, or you might say a champion in life.
Absolutely. Well, Mr. Williams, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thank you for sharing a little bit of your story, some of the lessons that you've learned in the application and how to apply it. You're absolutely someone who exemplifies that. And I just want to thank you for that. But also, if someone wanted to find out more about some of your books, you've written over 100 plus of them. So, what's the best way to find out more about you and maybe what's going on in Orlando with the baseball team?
Well, if people want to reach out, my email is pwilliams@patwilliams.com. pwilliams@patwilliams.com. Love to connect with people, and always eager to respond to them. pwilliams@patwilliams.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Mr. Williams. I appreciate it.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
Hope you enjoyed this episode of the Building Excellence Podcast. If you found value today, we would really appreciate it if you shared the show and left a rating and review. Also, be sure to follow us on all podcasts and social platforms, as well as YouTube, where you can watch full video episodes. To learn more about the podcast or any coaching or speaking, check out baileymiles.com. Thanks again, and now go work to build excellence in your life, leadership, and legacy.